Ready to go. All right. There we go. All right. So, all right. Fear of not knowing. Do not be afraid to not know. All right. So today we're going to cover all this stuff up here. We might get to alkanes, but last lecture I ended here with this, right? So we spent a lot of time talking about thermodynamics, delta G's, stuff like that. That only talks about this range right here between the reactants and the products. That's the thermodynamics. Thermodynamics tells us nothing about how fast the reaction goes. It just tells us what the relative energies are between the starting material and the products. It just tells us about the relative energy and whether that reaction will proceed forward. It doesn't tell us how it gets there. It doesn't tell us about the journey that it had to take. Okay, so this is this little hump here. I gave you guys an analogy about hair removal. It's like, ooh, you go through this higher energy state, and then you go to a lower energy state after that. We call this a transition state. That's what the reactants must transition through to in order to get here. You have to have some bond breaking and bond making to happen in order to get a new rearrangement of new bonds made and new bonds broken. Okay, so that energy that gets us from this reactant stage to this transition state is called the activation energy, or this what's known as the delta G dagger, right? It's the change in energy that goes from this reactant state to this high energy bond making, bond breaking transition. All right. And so many things, we'll get back to this, what all this stuff is. So this state or this initial phase here tells us about the rate of the reaction. Okay. So let's take a look at what the reaction rates are. So the reaction rate, for example, is a rate constant, which we'll see over here or down here is equal to this stuff, but the rate constant times the concentration of the reactant. So let's take reaction one up here, where C is in equilibrium with D, or C goes to D, right? So you ask yourself, what will the rate of that reaction be? The rate of that reaction is going to be defined by the rate constant times the concentration of your reactant, which in this case is C. Now I call that a first order reaction because the product D, only relies on the disappearance of C. Only one thing is needed to change in order to get to the products. That's why it's called a first order reaction. Only one thing's needed. Okay, and so if we look now at reaction two, okay, C plus D goes to E and F. Okay, that is the rate of that reaction is defined by a different proportionation constant, K, rate constant, times the concentration of both of the reactants, concentration of C and the concentration of D. So you add those constants together that are above or the power of those concentrations, you add those together, and that gives you what's known as a second order reaction. And that's really not a huge, huge thing to really understand because two things in a second order reaction, two things must collide in order for the reaction to occur. That's why it's called second order. Now, if we had, let's say, 2 moles of C plus 1 mole of D, we put the two here and the one here, we add our exponents, we get a third order reaction where three things must collide. 2 molecules of C must collide with D in order for us to get our product. So that would be a third order reaction. So that's, you see how that order goes. I'm sure every general chemistry professor at this university and even outside this university talked about first and second order reactions and third order reactions in that same way. Now, what is this proportionation constant? There is a pre-steady state constant, which we won't worry about. You go to Wikipedia, you type in this Arrhenius equation, you'll get this nonsense. You'll get a lot of verbiage that is outside the context of the book, right? But all we want to talk about here is this rate constant is proportional to this exponent raised to this power, where now we see some things that are very familiar to us. Activation energy and temperature. Okay, we know what R is a constant. Let's forget about that. Let's just look at activation energy and temperature, right? So this is E raised to this negative power, E to the negative X. As X, here's the generic equation. As X gets larger, E to the minus X gets smaller. So I posed a question over here. Where did I put that? Knowing that relationship here, in what ways knowing that this is a constant, R is a constant, in what ways can... Oh, I thought you were raising your hand. Oh, okay. In what ways can X get larger? Now your hand's raised. Okay, so if the activation energy is raised, this function, this gets larger. So E to the X gets smaller. Okay, so this whole phrase gets smaller. So the rate will decrease, right? That K, that rate constant will decrease. It'll decrease the rate. So what happens when the activation energy gets higher? You see there that this gap between here and here gets larger. So your rate's going to obviously decrease if you have a higher heel to go up every time, right? The other way that this thing can get, or so what are we talking about? X, how can this value increase? So EA can increase, but besides you, what other way can this now? Yes. If the temperature decreases, that value gets larger, right? Because it's in the denominator. So you see now, I think, Karada, last week or last Monday, I said, so what happens when reactions, what can make a reaction collide more frequently? Increase the temperature. You have more collisions. Okay, more kinetic energy is put into the molecules where their collisions now become very productive. So you see now, if you decrease the temperature, that value, this whole E to the minus thing decreases. Our rates will decrease. And we will not have enough energy to get over this. It's like going to Cedar Point, get on that ride, say, yeah, let's get all jacked up and go. Okay, so you don't have enough energy to have a productive ride. And so, yeah, those values were actually written right there. I forgot to put them there. All right. So let me see. Let me get back to the notes so I don't get too far away. Okay. So we have that. Okay. I mean, I think that's all I really wanted to say about all that. I really do. Okay. Yes, we know. Yeah. So I guess to put this in proper context, why are we talking about all this stuff? Okay. Basically, I want to be able to give you a curve like this. And you see little nodes on here, and you're able to determine that if whether the delta G of this particular curve is positive or negative, or I'm sorry, greater than or less than zero, okay? And identify where the activation energy is and what the transition state is, okay? I think that's pretty much, and know that the KEQ, what the KEQ for this reaction is, greater than, less than, or equal to one, just from looking at all this. If you didn't have any of this data up here, you could label this, which is what we're going to do on this far curve down here. We can now ask a lot of questions about this particular curve here. All right. So if I want to calculate delta G for this, that's quite interesting. So you walked in and the camera now focused at you. I can be up here going, there it is. I think it's back on me now. Good. All right. So if I want to calculate delta G for this, what do I need to know? Am I going to start measuring stuff all over the curve? Am I going to say, oh, let's go here and here and here? Going to do this and that. Okay. What can you tell me about KEQ for this reaction, this overall reaction? Camera's on you now. It turned to you for some reason. Yes. Are you Brooke, by the way? Yeah. Okay. Brooke. Yes. So KEQ is going to be, what do we know about? So here's how I want you to remember the KEQ. So here's K. There's a bow and arrow right there, man. That's a bow and arrow. Boom. It's associated with one. Okay. There's a boom. That's how you want it. So don't say positive or negative. Say that's to help you remember that KQ is associated with the number one. It's either going to be greater than, less than, or equal to one. So the KQ for this reaction is greater than one, because we know that since we're only talking about these two levels, we're looking at that line, that big, huge number one fits inside that symbol. That's consistent. That helps us double check that logic. I love you guys. So now, how many transition states do I have in this reaction? Five. Okay, here's TS1, TS2, TS3, TS4, TS5. How many steps is this reaction? Five, exactly. Step one, step two, step three, step four, step five. Okay, five different transition states. All right, let's call this, okay, so what are these little valleys called? Does anyone know? Intermediates, okay? So you go through high energy transition, and then you go to a lower energy intermediate. All the bond making and breaking is done, and you get to some intermediate states. This is intermediate one. This camera's really making me mad. Anyway, now this intermediate goes through another high transition state, okay? Bond making, bond breaking, and falls down to another intermediate. Okay, this goes through transition state three, intermediate three, intermediate four, and then finally the products. All right. Now, many, many textbooks talk about what the rate determining step is, like what step here between two intermediates defines the overall rate of this reaction. Cooper. The highest activation energy, where are you measuring your activation energy between this and that?
No, I'm not, but it would be
TS2. That's the biggest. TS2. Okay. Alex, did you have a counter argument? If you agree with that? Okay. So I'm going to disagree with this. I know many of you are going to say, oh, what? Huh? Hey, Shaggy, what? Okay, here's why. Oh, got it. Which one of these is going to be the rate determining step for the overall reaction going from R to P? We're going to call it the RDS. This one? True enough. True. But that doesn't... So, Alex. All right. Here we go. Okay, I know I'm going to get an array of answers, right? So Cooper, your original instinct is correct, but it's not from here to here. It's from here to there. That is the overall activation energy. Each of the steps has an activation energy that it must overcome. But where's my Cedar Point employees? Is he here today? You're there, right? You know damn well, you must put enough energy in at the beginning of that ride to get through all of the subsequent hoops and jumps and stuff like that. If you don't have enough in, like the dragster, whatever it's called, and you go up that little thing, and ladies and gentlemen, please stay in your seats while we reset the machine, and then... If you don't have enough energy, okay? So the rate determining process for that ride is the potential energy you must overcome at that little hoop in the middle, okay? So if I supply enough energy, let's say, to get over this hump only, okay? I get enough energy, come over here, go to right there, and now I'm going to go back. If I supply enough energy here, I get up here, I get up here, and then I this reaction will not go forward unless I supply enough energy to get over that step there. A lot of the other textbooks will use a pipe and have some constrictions in the pipe going across the way, right? Have a constriction at the beginning, then have some lesser constrictions along the way. But your water is flowing along the same potential energy at a flat curve. So yes, indeed, if you had a restriction at the beginning, that first constriction would be the rate determining step, okay? If you have a constriction in the middle, okay, that middle step would be the rate determining step. But that doesn't tell me, that's not a good representation of the rate determining step as opposed to considering this marble on a potential curve like this, or a roller coaster, if you will, right? So only when you have enough energy here will you ever get over those, and then it's all down from there. So this is the R, rate determining step. Senora. It gets over it, yes? If you supply enough energy to get over this for the entire time of your reaction, it'll be downhill.
But it does stop at TSI,
right? It would not stop at TSI. If you have enough energy, yes. Yeah, right. Yes.
So Professor Geiger and I got in a big debate.
I'm sure you guys did. And Geiger's, oh, tell me what you have to say.
It was a long thing. I took like 10 minutes to understand it.
Yes.
So I guess, why is it switched?
What do you mean, why is it switched?
It was TS2 because that's like the biggest jump.
This is the other argument that I've heard, right? So this rate, right, has a higher activation energy. So let's say you supply enough energy to get over that hump. So what? Let's say you supply enough energy to get over this hump right here. You're not going to get over this one.
But that's like the biggest jump. That's like the biggest, like when you break it down in different steps.
Yes.
That's like the biggest jump in the reaction that requires almost a lot of energy. That's what we were looking at, because we would have graphs of like,
Big
jump over here, and then it would go down really far, and then we have another rate limiting step.
But look, okay, let's say you get over that fast. You get over this one, okay? You get over that one. You come up here. You have you must slow down again.
Yeah, but if you had enough energy to get over that top hit, then you must be moving fast enough to go over the center.
So you're talking about speed. I'm talking about energy.
I know, but I'm saying energy.
This is why I like to use the roller coaster on a potential curve, right? Yeah. So, look. Let's say you supply enough energy here; it'll go, and slow down again. You got to think of Cedar Point, you guys. Top speed dragster. I am busted. I am flying out of that chute. And I'm slowing down. If I had smaller things to get over, let's say that last hoop was, so if I have a hoop so the top speed dragster, here's the launching pad. Let's say I have this. And then that to get over. And then it hoops back around here. I'm jetted out of this is taller than, I want to make this taller than that. I have enough speed to get out of. I can't do it without sound effects. Yes. I have to have enough energy to get over that.
one doesn't mean that that energy is just sitting there. It means that the energy was used to get there. So you have to have additional energy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah, it's not that it's just a bubble of energy that follows you.
That's right. You're not getting buffeted by air. Oh, no. It's like running up a hill. Ah, I got that first long hill pretty good. Now there's another little tiny hill. It's like, oh, God. Yeah, then there's another a hill higher. It's like, oh, my God, I can't go up yet another incline. I know there's been a lot of debate on this. I see it on the web all the time. But I said, I got to think of this as a marble going over a surface, given some initial energy, that I need to supply enough energy to get over that for sure in my reaction. I need to heat my reaction up hot enough so I can get over that step. I can heat up and yes. I like to think of Cedar Point, really, because I love Cedar Point. So, but I know that I've been on rides where I've rolled right back again because I didn't have enough energy to get over a certain hump. Yes. That's there you go. Yes. Because you have to supply enough energy to get over that. I know there's debate. There's debate, but I think this is correct because I've been on many rides that have rolled right back again because I didn't have enough energy coming out of the gate. All right. Shall we proceed? Proceed. Tallest peak is the rate determining step for this class. Mr. Geiger may disagree, but he'll now debate. But it's not an argument debate. It's just like contemplation. All right. So assets and bases. This is a moment where people can put on their jacket and say, man, I know about assets and bases. They can go. PKA. I just want to get a poll. It's like, this is the virtual eye clicker. Yes. Ooh, you're going to answer that question. Okay. No. Okay. I thought you were that person back there. Same hairstyle, but here we go. Go. Yeah. Well, go ahead and answer it. PKA is what? You're going to say the negative. Oh, no, are you going to give me an equation? Were you going to give me an equation? Yeah, forget all that. But if you're going to give me something else, like a description, that would be better. PKA is what? It's the value tells you something about the relative acidities. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So but have we heard of PKA before?
Yes.
Yes. KA is what? This is what I see when I think of K. What am I doing? What is this? Huh? Yeah. Yeah. So this is HA on the bottom. And this is H plus A minus. Okay. So are you going to help me with this demo? Go ahead. Yeah, no, I'm. You guys have helped me out. This is HA, and that's H plus A minus. So you know, yeah, but we'll go there. We'll go there with those formal definitions. Let's see this first, okay? You told me this is H and A attached, and this is H plus and A minus apart. Will you agree with that, Brooke? Getting tired of me? You're getting tired. Man, why don't you get on with it, brother? Would you get on with it? Why are you slowing down with all these dumb analogies? Because I want you to be able to see this quickly without having to think of these all these equations that you're coming up with. Okay, like negative log of blah, 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 and concentration of this over that and whatever. You got, yes. Yes, those are all technical terms that we'll get into, but all that doesn't ring a bell. Here's what we're going to do. Here we go. So now, hang on. You've seen the cheerleaders do this. If your team is a strong ass team, strong asset team, you're yeah. If you're a weak asset team, less of that. Less of that. Sometimes these visuals will help you understand these equations much faster than the equation itself. So I understand. Brooke kind of summarized this. Man, would you get on with it? I understand. So if we have HA and let's say something here. I'll see it in the comments, man. It's like, oh my God, spent too much time doing blah, 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 blah. I understand, yeah. And then A minus, okay? So we have that, okay? So now we know about the equilibrium constant because we just talked about the equilibrium constant. As said there, KEQ for this reaction is going to equal reactants. This is H3O plus the concentration of the reactants. I'm sorry, the products rather, over H concentration HA and H2O. That's the equilibrium constant for that reaction. Would everyone agree with that? Whoever disagrees, let me know. Okay. So if you've taken a general chemistry lab and you've done a titration, acid-base titration, you know that these acids are dissolved in a ton of water. Water, right? That water concentration is never changing really much. It's 55 molar constant. So it's not changing. So you don't really have to evaluate that when you're evaluating equilibrium constant. So that's why they rearrange this equation and put the water component there. And you have, I want to put this as H plus. I don't like doing that, but I just wanted. Do it to show you why this cheerleader thing works. Okay, that's all I'm going to do. So that's what I see when I see that. So this new constant that includes the concentration of water is Ka. That's the acid acidity constant, which equals this, okay? This is actually, so I put that as H plus, but we know it's H3O plus. Yes. Beautiful. Yes. All right. That's Ka. All right. And this is the acidity constant. Now, if you were given the Ka's for two different acids, let's say acid Q and acid P. Acid Q had a pKa. I'm sorry, oops, a Ka of 10 to the minus 2, and acid Q had a Ka of 10 to the 7th. You could really tell me which one of those is the stronger acid, stronger, okay? Who's doing that more? Who's doing that relatively, okay? Which one is the stronger acid? I'm going to put a symbol in there. It's less. Besides you, Cooper and Brooke, you guys are right here in my face. I want to get someone who's more steely character, right? Who's trying not to look at me. Kylie? No. Oh, whoa. I thought you told me like, okay, never mind. Was that correct? Okay. Okay. She scared me. She scared me there. Maybe I should go with TK. No. What do you think? Which acid is stronger, P or Q? And I'm going to put a symbol in between. I got to use acid P. Given this data, Ka, that and that, which is stronger, 10 to the minus 2 or 10 to the 7th? If we're given that Ka equals this dissociation of H to those two things. TK, help me out. P is a stronger acid because this is a larger number for Ka. That's doing that like that. And this one is going much more slowly. So P has a greater acidity strength than Q. Okay, now some union of scientists got together and said, that makes really good sense. The larger number thing, when we look at acids, is the stronger acid. They got together and said, okay, let's see if we can simplify these numbers a little bit by making a complex derivation of this and saying, let's talk about the pKa equaling not just something very simple, but let's throw some logarithmic terms in there. Log base 10 of the Ka. Let's do that, everyone. And now let's make it counterintuitive to say that the lower number is the stronger acid than the higher number. Let's do that. So let's convert these numbers. We're given this Ka. It's 10 to the 7th. We know that, let's look at this term right here. We know that the log base 10 of 10 to the 7th equals the exponent that's here. Yeah, put this in a note somewhere, right? So this equals minus 7. pKa of base, let's call it P on the previous board, is 7, or minus 7. The pKa of Q is the negative of negative 2, which is plus 2. This is pKa P, which is minus 7, and pKa Q, which is 2. So you see how intuitively obvious it was here. Larger number means you're doing more of this, stronger acid. That A does not like to be attached to that H nearly as well as this A like to be attached to this H. This was a slower dissociation of this one. This was faster. We come over here. Everything looks clean because we have these nice whole numbers over here, granted, but it's counterintuitive. The pKa of a smaller number is a stronger acid than the pKa of a larger number. Yeah.
And it wants lower.
Yes. Yes. That's right. There we go. If you want to throw some analogies on there, yes. You want to be something under par. Yes. Are we good with that? How you doing there? I love it. Yeah, I'm looking right at you. Yes. Is it good with this? Okay, good. All right. So how do we determine relative acidity strengths? So I have a mnemonic. This atoms, raisinets are induced in orbit. But Brooke will go, oh my God, here you go again, man. Another analogy. But another book just calls it REO. But to me, that means nothing. Because A is atoms, R is resonance, I is induction, and O is orbital. But if I say that's Adam's raisinets, that candy, that raisin candy, as Adam's raisinets are induced into orbit, I can see something. I can see my friend Adam and his package of raisinets in a scary movie are thrown above him, and they start to orbit around him. They're induced in orbit because he threw them up there. That's what I see. But if you remember REO, that's good. We're going to look at the atoms. We're going to look at the atoms first to determine the relative acidity of things. So if we look at this, and this, and say, let's underline, which one of those protons is more acidic than the other? We look at the atom, okay? But instead of looking at just the atom, we're gonna look at the conjugate base of these. So what's the conjugate base of this? Is it gonna have a positive charge? It's going to have a negative charge because I'm losing a proton to water. And the conjugate base of this, whoops, is also negative. Now, I look at the stability of those negative charges to tell me which was the stronger acid, like which negative charge gave up its proton more easily. Here we go. Brooke, here we go again. So imagine you're just,
stop picking on me, man. I wasn't teasing you before.
I know, I'm sorry. So imagine you have a blanket. Brooke and I have blankets. You have a blanket, right? And I try to take it away from you. It's like, because you're not very stable without it, right? But if I take it away, you're going like, oh God, my blank. Okay. Now I have a blanket. And I said, but I'm like, I'm not attached to my, okay? So you have a stronger affinity. So if we look at you after your blanket's taken away and look at your instability after it's taken away, we know that you wanted to hold on to your blanket more than I did. You got that? So now, and we're looking at the stability that we have after we lose what we were attached to initially. So this was initially attached to a hydrogen. It loses a proton. This was attached to two protons, and it loses one. So I asked, which is the more stable base up here? Go for it. Why? Oh, my goodness. Can you reach her back there? Can you reach her and give her a fist bump? That the electrons on that oxygen are closer to its nucleus and therefore more stabilized than the negative electrons on the nitrogen because it's more electropositive than oxygen. So this is a more stable base. Therefore, it was able to give up its proton better than this was. So the stronger acid up here is that one. Hope I got that right. You know what? I didn't get that right. This was more stable to leave. So this was the stronger acid. I just circled the wrong one. Please forgive me. So all these terminologies, let's keep those terminologies out of it. Let's just keep thinking about cheerleaders and blankets, okay? This one was more stable, so it was able to give up its proton better than this one was. So this was the stronger acid. Sorry about that confusion, all right? So now, that's one thing. Now let's look at the size of the atom. So we know we're going down the periodic table. What happens to the atomic size? It gets larger, yes. Now, I know you can't see this over here, but here is a large space with two electrons in it of same charge. Here's a smaller space, two electrons, same charge. Who's more comfortable? The bigger one's more comfortable. I see a look up like, what? How you feel, man? Are you comfortable? No, right now, are you?
Yeah.
Is this a good distance?
This.
Is this good?
No.
Yeah. How's this? How's this? A little better. A little better. Got into a zone over there, man. I was like, okay. A little better. So now, stronger acid. It's going to be the more stable. It's going to generate the more stable conjugate. Base. Oops. Dang, I'm just off here, man. Okay, so we have this smaller lobe versus this larger lobe. So sulfur, when it gets to its conjugate base, has electrons in a nice larger orbital, a 3sp3 orbital, third row, larger orbital, more stable. This will be our stronger acid because this conjugate base is more stable than this one. This one did not want to give up that proton and put those electrons in that small orbital compared to that one, comparatively to that one. I know you guys are familiar with resonance, right? How does resonance come into play? So that's where we are on REO. We look at the atom. Now we're going to look at resonance. Okay, we have acid A, acid B. Looking at these, you may not be able to tell which one's a stronger acid. We look at the conjugate base of this. We have those. Let's put a couple of electrons on here to show electron pair. If you can share a heavy load with a friend, you're going to do it. You're going to hold it by, if you're forced to hold it by yourself, you have to hold it by yourself the whole time. What can this lone pair of electrons do? Where can it move? Move towards that sp2 center, and that goes there. So we have a resonance structure. That negative charge is shared on this oxygen and that oxygen. It moves around. This one can't move anywhere because this is an sp3 center. We cannot move those electrons towards that, so it's stuck. This negative charge is more stabilized. So it will more freely give up that proton than this one where the negative charge is stuck. So this is the stronger acid. So here we see a case where resonance stabilization affects the relative acidity of apparently similarly hydrogenated species. We have an oxygen with a hydrogen, oxygen with a hydrogen. We're able to just differentiate which one of these is the stronger acid by looking at the resonance. Let's now look at induction. All of you guys probably have phones that charge through induction, right? You don't have to connect something in. You can put it on top of a little plate and it charges through a magnetic field and you get electricity flowing through. That's induction, right? So it's a through distance effect. So if you have, let's say, that versus this. And so which one of these two is more acidic? We know those fluoros are more electronegative than hydrogens. If you're comparing, this is the only difference, fluoros. And we also know that when we have bond polarity, we have those fluorines pulling electrons to them, not only just between these bonds directly related, attached to carbon, but also through other bonds. So the electron density is flowing that way. So now let's look at the conjugate base of this and look at the electrons that form when that hydrogen leaves and what kind of orbital they're in. I'm going to put my fluoros here. I'm going to compare it now to this. Which electron orbital is sucking its electrons more closely to the oxygen and why? I was going to hold way back there. Yes. Okay. Because these electrons are being sucked this way. These are being pulled closer to the nucleus, which are more stable than these are through induction. Notice those fluoros are not directly attached to this oxygen or whatever. They're through bond interaction, right? So this pulls these electrons closer to. So this is the stronger acid in this case. So this is where induction comes into play. One last thing, orbitals. And this will be quick. Because I know you guys are ready to go, man. Take a look at this. Which one of these hydrogens is more acidic? And the question will be, why? Why? It's a C triple bond CH. Let's look at the conjugate. Let's look at the conjugate. Let's look at the orbitals. What orbital is this electron pair in? The hybridized orbital. What hybridized orbital is it in? TK, go. SP2S. What does that mean? SP. What about these? SP3. Which electrons are further from nucleus? SP3, because it has more P characters, bigger lobe, they're further away from the nucleus than these. So this is, we've gone through the REO, I erased it. We've demonstrated how the atom, you look at the atom, electronegativity, size, look at resonance to see if resonance moves the negative charge to stabilize it. Induction through space stabilization of a negative charge by pulling electrons closer to the nucleus. And the orbital, if you have an orbital that has very little P character, those electrons are going to be closer and stabilized by the nucleus more than those that have SP3 character where they're further away. There we go. We're going to finish chapter 2 on Friday.
So which one's stronger acid than
that one? Before we do, let me turn this video off. So,